From the shores of Puget Sound, this is Greener Views, a unique media resource for information, education, consultation, and fun. Greener Views is a part of the Healthy Homecast Network and is brought to you exclusively by HealthyPainting.com and AmbrosiaDigitalMedia.com. Each episode will introduce and connect you with services, products, practices, organizations, and groups that focus on the health, happiness, safety, well-being, charity, and community of all. Find us on the web at www.greenerviews.net. And now, your host, Daryl Whalen.
Hello, and welcome to episode 28 of Greener Views. I'm Daryl Whalen, along with audio engineer Randy Parcell and videographer Michael Schwartz. On our last episode, number 27, our guest was Michael Armstrong from Second Use Building Materials. Joining us this time around is Eric Lesueur from Alki Moves, who will be talking with us about, amongst other things, Moshe Feldenkrais, and we can get the pronunciation on that. Yeah. Inspiring listeners to take charge of their own happiness and health, how to run pain-free, and the workshops he teaches to various groups on self-use or body mechanics. Greener Views is a part of the Healthy Homecast Network and is brought to you exclusively by HealthyPainting.com and AmbrosiaDigitalMedia.com. Okay, let us get right into things. Welcome to the show, Eric.
Yeah, thank you.
And thank you for joining us this evening. You're welcome. Please tell us briefly, what is Alki Moves?
Alki Moves is I would say it's the only Feldenkrais center in West Seattle. And it's where two blocks off of the beach, of Alki Beach. And I talk about my skeleton being the other part of we, but really what we do is we help people to learn to understand that they are the change that they're looking for, as opposed to looking outside for people to help them change. We help people relearn that they are the change within them that they knew at one time when they were little itty bitty babies. So that's really what we do.
Be the change. What's the be the change? Be the change. Great. What is your position title, and what are your specific roles and responsibilities?
My position. I put down here the chief cook, bottle washer. I mean, really, I started this whole thing on a prayer, I would say. So I basically run the whole show. I'm the owner, the marketer, the actual worker. I go out and do all the promo work, pretty much everything. So most of my work is in the realm of marketing, because most people have never heard of what Feldenkrais is. They give me that look like, Felden what? So I usually spend a lot of time just kind of going through that, you know, what is Feldenkrais, you know, or what isn't Feldenkrais, you know, because a lot of times people think it's a religion or a moving company. It moves. I go, no.
Frankenkrais.
Yeah.
Young Frankenstein.
Yeah, Frankenstein.
So how did, can you tell us a little bit more deeper into the history of, how you got started and what led you to this kind of work?
Wow. I looked at that question and said, where did I start this? And, you know, I always look back to, I think the year was 81 or 82. I was over at Washington State University and I was studying to be an engineer/architect. And, I was playing intramural football and I injured my knee. And being one of those lifetime skeptics of the medical profession, I never sought medical help. And I decided that I could rehab my knee on my own. And so I took it upon myself. I was lucky in that where I lived, we had an indoor swimming pool. And I went in there and just started doing simple movements of getting my knee back in shape and just kind of teach myself how to rehab myself. And within 6 months, I was able to go skiing again. And that kind of was the beginning, the impetus of really learning that I had the answers within me at some level. There was something within me. And then a few years later, I think it was 1986, I first went to massage school. And that's where I started to learn more about, you know, what was inside of this body, you know, the bones, the muscles, and how all that worked. And so things just kind of moved along. And so finally in 2002, I entered a Feldenkrais training, and where I really got to immerse myself into the intricacies of learning how to relearn how to learn, basically. And so it started about 30 years ago, which interestingly was the same time that I had discovered Buckminster Fuller, which really, it's interesting how a lot of things he talks about really parlay into what I do also. I just kind of discovered that by accident. And so I've always been kind of an engineer geek, but the math always kind of threw me. So I never became a real engineer because I couldn't do the calculus. So I'm kind of more of a practical engineer of the body. And so I've always been very interested in not only how the body works, but how the mind works and how the two work together in concert.
And we have everything that we need inside of us, and we have the ability, our body has all the answers, and it's just a matter of getting some kind of support or inspiration from sometimes outside for those of us that just, especially in this modern society, all that stuff sounds kind of strange to us.
Yeah.
Because we think we have to go to some type of, a big doctored professional.
Yeah, and I think that kind of kicks into another question here of you're talking about going outside for help. And the one thing that I like to say that I differentiate myself from most of the health, wellness, medical field is that I don't fix people, because I know that if I fix them, they're not going to know how they were fixed, and we have habits, and we're just going to revert back to what we know. And this is part of my own evolution of my own learning, is that the more I understand how I'm in control of my own pain, how I create my pain, then once I can figure that out, then I can undo that. I start stopping doing things. And that's, I'm also a massage therapist, so this is, I relate to how if someone came to me and they had a shoulder injury, and they came to me as a massage therapist, I'm going to work on their shoulder. I'm going to do something, try and fix their shoulder so that it feels better. But as a Feldenkrais teacher, I'm looking at how within you can you find support through your system, through your nervous system, through your skeleton, that you can find the support so your shoulder isn't having to hold you up anymore, or that your neck didn't have to hold you up. So you can find the tool within yourself to fix yourself, so you don't have to keep going back and getting re-cracked or re-massaged or whatever it is. So again, it's all about helping my clients or the people who come to me find that they have the tools within themselves, the resources within themselves.
Exactly. And ultimately, from the highest hippy-dippy level, it's we're not really ever broken anymore. We just need to put ourselves into the space that's the most optimum for our body and our mind and our spirit and the whole shebang. Well, great. So, that touches on it a little bit, but why don't you get a little deeper into telling us who is your target clientele? What type of person would be a great match for Alkai Moves?
Well, it's interesting that the target clientele has kind of been moving all around the place. I mean, from the first time that I met you, it was pretty much everyone. Anyone who had a heartbeat. That's 7 billion people. So we need to limit the field a little bit. It's interesting. I turned 50 this past year. We're the same age.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I hadn't been doing for 30 years, because it hurt too much was running. And I stopped running. I was trained, like most people, how to run, doing the, landing on your heel and, powering through. And all that, it led to injuries, lots of injuries.
Mm.
Running was never fun. And so I basically quit running. I bought a bicycle and said, threw away the running shoes. But in the past couple of years, I've really been exploring how can I run and have it be pain-free and enjoyable. And so a lot of exploring using Feldenkrais and reading a lot, studying a lot about barefoot running, minimalist running, watching Kenyans run, watching how they run versus the average Western person, how they run, and being my own guinea pig. I love being a guinea pig, but, because it doesn't mean anything if I haven't tried it. And so my target market really has come down to people like me, boomers who feel that they can't run for whatever reason. And interesting, I just did a health fair over at the Highline Athletic Club about a month ago, and I had this question: why do you run or why don't you run? And pretty much the answers were, my knee, my hip, my knee, I'm too old, my hip, my knee. So that was pretty much, but they all kind of had this look in their eyes like, I would sure like to run though. I miss that feeling, that freedom of running at some point in my life when I was a little kid. But they're at this advanced age where there's like the idea, the thought, it's just so far removed. It's not even a possibility anymore. And so I always look at, I love those challenges. Like, oh, well, if I can just start taking someone down that road where they start to see the possibilities of what they can do. And running is a great medium for that, for learning, because within running, I have learned that when I'm out there and I'm doing it nice and lightly, I feel so much freer, not just as a, physically, but mentally.
So it's running in a healthy and safe and responsible way. We don't need to exert ourselves and push us to the beyond what we can. Should do, because there's certainly a point where you can go too far, especially as you get older.
Yeah, it's interesting because I was working with this marketing guy and he was trying to frame, what type of running. I go, well, let's put it this way. All the running coaches that I know, they're always training people to complete an event.
Like a marathon or something.
Yeah, it's like, okay, couch to 5K or couch to marathon. And me, it's kind of more, I look more at how different people in history, like the, I will probably get this pronunciation wrong, but it's the Tamahamaru Indians of northern Mexico. Running to them is not an event. Running to them is their life. They're going to another village. Okay, let's put on sandals, go run 30 miles. Hi, how you doing? Okay, I got to go home. And to them, it's not like, okay.
They don't use like that. They don't get into their Escalade and drive over there.
Right. put on their nice new, expensive running shoes and shorts and, okay, I'm ready. And they run, and then afterwards they're all in pain. And whereas these people, they run and nothing to it. It's like, okay, I'm home. I still feel good, except for I can go out and do something else. So running is more of a means of expressing who you are, as a means of getting around town, not as a achievement.
Yeah.
And so that's really...
It's necessity and lifestyle for them.
Yeah. And, since this program is really about sustainability, and, I see this as another means of sustainability, especially when gas is, currently over 4, and I'm sure it's going to 5 or 6.
It's the oldest alternative transportation known to mankind.
Yeah. It's interesting because I daily, I either walk or I run or something around West Seattle, and I see a core group of people who kind of are doing the same. And sometimes, I'll just be wearing my jeans and my coat, and I'll just, I don't want to walk. Let's just run like half a mile and just kind of running really light. And At first, I was a little self-conscious about it, thinking, well, who's this crazy man? He's not even wearing running shorts or shoes, and, you know, he's running down the block, and got his coat on and jeans, and he's smiling, you know.
Yeah.
What's he on,
you know? It turns out in West Seattle, in Seattle, people don't care.
Yeah, and it's just kind of like, wow, you know, this is, you know, I mean, before I came here, I ran up to the junction just to go get some food. That's not a, that's like over 2 mile jaunt up the hill, and to me, it's like, yeah, so what? It just, to me, it's more of a lifestyle, being able to run where I want to, when I want to, not have to, having to rely upon my car or a bus, or just kind of that freedom.
So let's get into a few of the things that you communicated you like to discuss. The running was one of them, and we'll get into that a little bit more, because I know that that's something that we did meet several years ago. I had the opportunity to DJ your wedding, which was cool, a few years ago. And
I still have vision of you up the rock and away.
But I didn't know so much about the running, and it's interesting because I'm at a point in my life where I need to exercise more in general, but that's a whole other thing. But why don't you touch briefly upon Moshe Feldenkrais? Who is he? What has he given to us? And what part does all of that play in your life and in your business?
Sure. It's Moshe.
Moshe
Feldenkrais. And he was born in 1904 in the Ukraine. And at the age of 14, which is right at the end of World War I, 1918, he took his life belongings, put it in a wheelbarrow, and walked to Palestine, and to one of the first, you know, groups of Jewish people who immigrated to the new country of Palestine. And so he started out. He was a scientist. After he went through his schooling, but eventually, what got him, what started the Feldenkrais method, was his own knee problems. He had injured his own knees, in fact, so severely it was World War II, and he was serving on a sub in the British Admiralty, and he slipped on the sub and had exacerbated old soccer injuries or football
and all that metal and everything.
Yeah, and at the time, knee surgery was very crude, and basically they just wanted to amputate his leg. He said, well,
can't get any cruder than that. It's a saw.
Yeah. It's like, well, you know, I can't use your leg here. Let's just cut it off. He said, wait a minute. I'm a scientist. That's, you know, basically, that's, you know, BS.
Yeah.
You know? And so he started studying babies, because his wife at the time was a pediatrician. So he started studying babies. How do babies learn? How do babies learn to do anything? They start to learn to how to lift their head or to lift an arm, and that really fascinated him. It started teaching him about how he could use those same ideas that the human babies were doing to help him resolve his knee issues. And so he found success, and he started teaching other of his colleagues. He was in the scientific community, and he was back in Tel Aviv at the time, so he started teaching his friends, and eventually he taught the current premier of Israel, who was, I can't think of his name, the very first one. We basically had him standing on his head on the beach, and it was in Life magazine, I think in the late 50s, and say, who is this man? And so Moshe Feldenkrais, I heard someone mentioned this a year or two ago, but he's probably one of the most important people of the 20th century that most people have never heard of. And it's just fascinating. I mean, even today, most people have never heard of who he was, unless you go to Germany. For some reason, in Germany, he's almost like a religion over there. You know, of course, if you go to Israel, you'll find a lot of people who know about Feldenkrais, but really, the thing that got him into it was bad knees. And so, in fact, the first lesson in this book, this is a pivotal book, that the Awareness to Movement book, but the very first lesson in this book was all about how can you go from sitting to standing without hurting your knees. And we don't have time for a lesson in here, but you know, it's if you really start to study how you go from sitting to standing, the way that most people do it, they put a lot of pressure into their knees. And so he had to teach himself, how could he do that without putting pressure in his knees? And it took him a while, and it's still taking me a while. I've been studying this for 10 years.
So we take it for granted that we all know how to do it because it's something that we all do, but the truth of the matter is the majority of people don't even know how to stand up properly.
Pretty much. It's kind of like that old saying, when did you learn how to walk? Well, no, I'm still teaching myself. You know, 50 years later, it's amazing what you can learn.
Wow.
So, yeah, he was a very fascinating man. And I hadn't heard of him until probably 15 years ago. But he did his last American training at the time that I was going to college when I hurt my knee. So it's kind of one of those serendipitous things.
Yeah.
And it's like, wow, you know.
Cool. So I know for myself, I certainly could use some support and some inspiration. Can you tell us here at the podcast and our listeners, how do we take charge of our own health and our own happiness?
How do we take charge of our own health and happiness? Wow, that's a good question. let me think about that one. The first thing that I do whenever I'm working with anyone is figure out where are you now?
Mm.
Where are you now? I mean, this is how I start any lesson, whether it's a group lesson or a one-to-one lesson. The biggest thing that I'm trying to instill upon the person or people is to help them start to become aware of where are they now? How are they finding support in the environment that they're in right now? And when we can start to be, when we can understand how we are doing something, then we can change. But until we know what we're doing, then we can't change and get better with our health and our happiness. You know, how can you be happier if you don't know where you are now? You know, you have to have a baseline. And in my work, I use the floor often as a baseline because the floor gives me feedback. This chair is giving me feedback, more so on my feet, but it's giving me feedback that I'm having a hard time controlling it. But it's giving me feedback as to where I can push to turn the chair, where I can go this way. And once I'm starting to get a better idea of how I can find support to this surface, then I can change how I can relate to it. And that's how we use learning as a means to improve where we are in life to where we want to go.
So we pretty much go through life just without giving it much thought, and we don't know. And so you're saying, how can we get somewhere if we don't know where we're at?
Exactly.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
I get that.
And it's interesting you said without thinking, but sometimes it's the opposite. We think too much.
We overthink it.
Well, we spend our life in our heads, and we're so up in our heads that we're really divorced from anything below the head. It's like, it's because when I first started doing this work, I would go into a retirement home or the senior center and give a talk, and there will be all these older people sitting in chairs around, and I would just ask them a simple question. You just notice, where are your feet? How are your feet on the floor? And pretty much every one of them would look down. So, yeah they're there. But, I mean, that's the level of disconnect that they had between their brain and their body. They didn't know where their feet were.
Yeah.
And once, I mean, it seems like a very simple thing. And yet, it's very elusive.
We're more disconnected from ourselves than we realize.
Because we're running around in our heads.
Yeah.
And we think so much that, you know, the rest of our body's like, if something goes wrong, I'll go get it fixed.
Yeah.
And I'm saying the more we get into our body, the more we can integrate our body with our brain, and they work so much better together.
Hmm. Now I'm getting it.
And the challenge of this work is the more I talk about it, usually the less people You get it, because it's a very experiential concept of, you know, if your viewers are, while they're listening to this, they can even think about, you know, the simple idea, where are my feet? Where am I sitting? You know, do I feel pressure more on one side or the other? They're simple questions, and yet they're not simple. Because sometimes one of the complaints, want to say, that I get from students is that although the work isn't physical, it can be, it's very tiring mentally, because they're not used to asking themselves those questions, those type of questions. And this work is really about teaching people how to move better. It's really about teaching people how to ask better questions. Mm. And your body is the classroom. And it's a concept that it seems really alien to most people I talk to, because they're not used to thinking in life that way. It's like, wow, I mean, I actually can learn from my own body how I do things. Because we look at, we meaning us in the Feldenkrais world, we look at the way that we carry our body is an expression of the way that we think.
Yeah. And feel and act and everything.
Yeah. You can't separate any of that. It's all connected. There's a pattern. It's a pattern. The way you drive is probably the way you act toward your employees, or the way you solve problems.
Yeah. Yeah.
You ramrod through it, or you can go methodically. Or it's very interesting, because I spend a lot of time observing. That's what I am. I'm an observer. And that's pretty much what I'm doing when I'm either teaching a class or one-on-one. I spend more time just really observing what is going on, not just with the people I'm working with, but also with myself. How am I relating to myself while I'm working with these people? Because if I'm doing weird things for myself, that's going to translate into how I'm experiencing how they're moving, because we're all connected in everything that we do. So it's all about patterns and just really seeing how those patterns relate to, you know, how we can live our lives.
So the more connected and in touch you are with the way, what, with your body and the way you move and the way you act and feel, then the likelihood is that you're going to act and feel and behave and in a much greater level. And the truth of us as people, especially in this society, we're just in this like go forward and jet up and stuff motion, and we're not even thinking about anything. So that's why a lot of us are strained and drained and don't feel well and don't act well.
Yeah, it's this work has taught me so many things about myself and how I can get through life, the things that I never thought that I would learn. And I'm not sure what stories I've told you in the past, but this kind of veers off the running subject and all. But one of the things that I really learned, this was while I was still in my training, my first wife, she passed away. And it was in my last year of my training. And the whole episode, it's very shocking when your loved one just passes away. It's very debilitating, or it can be. And that's where I really found the value of going back and finding, where am I at? Or back to that question of, where do you start? Well, where am I at now? And the process that I used was to lie on the floor and take inventory. How is my head resting? How are my arms resting on the floor? Where am I finding contact? All the way down, you know, as far as different questions down in my leg, my feet. Those questions, what they did was, they took all the energy and blood out of my head, which is where we're swimming, especially when we're in trauma, and it started directing the emphasis down into my body. And so it started integrating my body back with my head, so I could literally rise up from the floor and take control of my life again.
Mm.
And so that's just one of the stories that have really, that this work has really surprised me in the power of how it could move me forward and be more fully human.
It sounds pretty deep. It sounds like in order to really, really get into it, it'd take a long time. But there's a lot of trauma and a lot of drama in our lives and our society and stuff, and you're basically offering an opportunity to get past that and to live life in a level that you may not have even imagined was even possible.
Yeah. Yeah.
Great. I'm all for that. What is the thing that you are most passionate as it relates to all of this work?
I actually wrote something down for that. Let me see if... I put down, when I see people's eyes light up with what they learn about themselves. Because a lot of people, they come to me and they're skeptical.
Yeah.
Which I totally understand. And I'm down with it. I'm used to people's skepticism. But after playing with them, maybe it could only be 5-10 minutes. And they all of a sudden get this idea that, wow, I didn't know I was doing that. I didn't know that I had control. I didn't know I was causing that pain. And they get this look in their eyes like someone had just given them a gift.
Yeah.
And they have a tap. They have a touch of their own humanity coming back to them. That drives me. You know, I love seeing that in people, that they are starting to get that they have control of their life.
And how could you not love that?
Yeah, it's beautiful. Like, wow, you know, it's
so people have a certain way of being or a certain habit that they're way they're carrying their body. They may have had their entire life, and it's just a matter of changing something,
yeah,
really small and simple, and it can make them almost feel fantastic. Instantaneously.
And the cool thing is I never know when that's going to happen.
No.
It surprises me a lot. It still surprises me when something like that happens. I go, wow. It's the more I step back and away and the less I do, the more potential for them to find themselves. And that's really the secret behind this work is, you know, people ask me, what do I do? And I say, well, as little as possible. Because my job is really, again, one of an observer. I'm really observing, how are you doing things? And I'm not telling you to do them right or do them differently. I'm just helping you understand, how do you do it?
You're allowing the people that you work with to do the work. And you're, yeah. You're like a facilitator.
Yeah, a guide.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, I'm just kind of guiding you through and helping you understand what you're doing as opposed to telling you that, you know, do it this way or do it that way or this is right or that's wrong. And Moshe Feldenkrais, he had a great quote, because we get this a lot, is, you know, am I doing this right? And I say, well, it doesn't matter if you're doing it right or wrong. If you know what you're doing,
yeah,
then you're doing it right.
Right and wrong is a funny thing, huh?
Yeah.
So what's the mission statement of Alkai Moves?
My mission statement is to awaken and inspire the genius within all of us.
I like it.
It's funny, I didn't even have a mission statement until you sent me this questionnaire, and I just haven't been working on that subject.
Well, that's what we're here for. You know, we're here to inspire and motivate the changes in all of us.
Yeah.
In each other. So for those that aren't in our area, is there a resource for this specific type of service? I would imagine so at this point.
Yeah. www.feldenkrais.com.
How about for this specific area? Is there like a Northwest Feldenkrais organization or some type of?
Well, we have a small group within Seattle. We're called the Feldenkrais Teachers in Seattle.
Oh, there you go.
But it's only kind of a handful of teachers that live in Seattle. And of course I'm the only one south of downtown, and then everyone else is up north and Wallingford and Fremont, you know, up in the hippie zone.
So there really isn't a lot though around, is there?
It's interesting because in all of West Seattle and Burien, I'm the only representative.
Yeah. Interesting.
And it's not that I'm the only one who's gone through the training.
Yeah.
It's just going through the training and then actually stepping out and doing the work is a huge...
Being out in the field and stuff, yeah.
Yeah.
So also for those not in our area, what advice do you have for someone hoping to find or use this type of service or a similar service?
Well, again...
Go on to Feldenkrais.com.
Yeah, Feldenkrais.com. They have a section on there. It's called Find a Practitioner.
There you go.
And you can find... Of course, some of us, well, a lot of us are kind of lax in putting in our information about classes and workshops, but you can find the practitioners out there.
Yeah.
And it goes by city and country because it's, let's see, feldenkrais.com. It's for North America, Canada. But it's, again, they're, if you're in different countries, you can find it.
They'll definitely be able to find somebody that way. Especially in Germany. Great. Well, we're going to take a very short break and be right back with the rest of the interview.
You are listening to Greener Views. Gravity connects me to the earth, which connects me to people who connect me to myself more honestly. And gravity connects me to the crust, which connects to the leaves on the trees that make it possible to breathe.
With naive mind shield like a helmet, they would tell us that we don't know how we feel or how to connect with other people on the planet. Oh, if we only knew the power in each blue disillusioned little. In the vision of one resides all, destroy the individual, for this is critical. The self ain't everything, hands to grasp, to cling, to mask material vastly shipwrecked beings. At last, release the greed amassed with capitalist tasks and contact the mass. Communication is all we have in dwindling fast.
Welcome back to episode 28 of Greener Views and our conversation with Eric Lesueur of Alki Moves. This is the point in the interview that we veer away from the conversation that is exclusively about the business you're here representing, as we learn about that which has made you the unique and special person that I know you are and everybody else soon will. So to begin with, who or what would you say has had the greatest influence on your life so far?
Well, I always think of Gandhi as one of my biggest influences. When I was studying accounting over at Washington State in the 80s, I spent a lot of time in the library reading Gandhi books. Mainly because I didn't want to study accounting, but I've always been fascinated by his philosophy. And I was really surprised that there's not just three books. There were about 100 different books by Gandhi on all different things. And some of the most fascinating things about social economics and just, you know, different various topics. So he's probably one of the bigger influences in my life. And of course, Martin Luther King Jr. and who else? I was thinking, of course, Buckminster Fuller. Being at the time, I was also. It's interesting with Buckminster Fuller. When I was in college, I remember coming back from the dining hall. I would collect popsicle sticks, and back in my dorm room, I built my own geodesic dome.
Ah, there you go.
Popsicle sticks. And then, of course, he came to the university and talked.
Did you see him over there?
Yeah.
Oh,
I don't remember a thing he said. Of course, I fell asleep 10 times during the talk, but I was fascinated.
Yeah.
And so I've always been kind of a nerd. I just think stuff like that just fascinates
me.
How do things work? And so that and social justice and how can we best get along and find ways to get along. So kind of a cross between my nerdiness and my, you know, compassion for people. So those are probably the three biggest people. And of course, lately in the last 15 years, Moshe Feldenkrais and all the ideas that he has brought forth.
Cool. Yeah, you know, I remember seeing Kurt Vonnegut speak at the Case Western Reserve University back about 30 years ago, and I don't remember one single thing he said, but I just remember this seems like it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I have no idea what the heck the guy said. So without regard to subject matter, speaking of Kurt Vonnegut, what authors or books have been the most inspirational to you?
Well, the first one I put down here was Illusions by Richard Bach. Mm.
Yeah.
I think I've owned about four copies
of
that book.
I have that book.
And I would wear it out, and I remember giving it away to people. And you know, that book just really, I think I first read it in the early 80s, and it just really, it struck a chord within me, you know, about the possibilities of of what we can be and who we are. And so Carlos Castaneda, huge influence on me. And yeah, I remember sitting on a park bench in downtown San Diego in the room of the mid-80s, talking to a total stranger about Carlos Castaneda. It's just very fascinating. And of course, when I got into my Feldenkrais training, my trainer was brought up Carlos Castaneda about, you know, the petty tyrant within us that seems to drive who we are, and so that he's, and of course there's Moshe Feldenkrais and all his books. The Tao Te Ching is a very instrumental book in my life. If I had to pick a religion, I would be a Taoist.
Yeah.
I practice Tai Chi every morning. I've been doing Tai Chi since the mid-80s, and that's, again, that influences who I am and the work that I do. It all relates in different ways. I put Dan Millman, Way of the Peaceful Warrior.
Peaceful Warrior, I love it.
Oliver Sacks, he's a neuro scientist, and he wrote a lot of books about different neurological challenges that people have gone through and how it's affected their lives. And it personally affected me because I mentioned that I've been hard of hearing most of my life, and it wasn't until about 3 years ago when I got a really good, nice pair of hearing aids. And one of the interesting things that I experienced when I got the hearing aids was, wow, I can hear all this stuff. Wow, I don't want to hear all this stuff.
Yeah.
And it's like almost every week I had to go back into the hearing aid place because one of my hearing aids would stop working. And it was interesting because I knew it wasn't the hearing aids. I knew it was something within me. My nervous system's inability to accept that I can all of a sudden hear these birds that I never heard before. And it was almost driving me crazy. And so Oliver Sacks has written, he wrote a lot of stories about how if someone was blind and all of a sudden they can see, how that really just messed with who they were, because in their mind they were always a blind person who all of a sudden could see. And that was almost drove them, well, some of them, it did drive them to kill themselves because they couldn't deal with it. And so it was very necessary for me to understand that there's much more to just putting hearing aids, and you have to also accept it psychologically.
Especially later in life. I mean, going through your whole life in a certain space, and then all of a sudden it's completely transformed. And
it's funny because I never realized how lucky I was until I got hearing aids that worked really well, because now I have the best of both worlds. I can hear, and I can choose not to hear. My wife would say, well, don't all men do that, but...
Yeah, I was going to say, any of us could do that.
I put down Alan Watts. Alan Watts, I read a lot of his books. And another author I put down is Jay Widener. I don't know if you've heard of him.
I'm not sure about that one.
It's kind of more in the spiritual eclectic realm. Again, I'm very deeply spiritual person in the sense that I'm always questioning, you know, what's behind this wall, not literally, but you know, it's just I can get out there in those sense.
Yeah.
And so those are probably the most. It's interesting because I've got probably 1,000 books or more
in
my basement and everywhere.
Oh yeah,
else. I'm one of those book hounds. Like, oh yeah,
I have like half the ones you mentioned. Okay. So, I was actually gonna, for the sake of time, I was gonna pass this one up, but I can't with you because I know you too well. What specific songs or musical artists have been the most inspirational to you? I know you're a music person.
Wow. I always think of rock because I'm a rocker like you. But, I always think Rush. I mean, I love Rush. But I played saxophone in high school, so I have a heavy jazz blues influence too. And, Sonny Rollins and Miles Davis. Even though Miles was, you know, looked at as an asshole, a jerk, but he was also a genius.
Yeah.
And again.
Well, most geniuses are, aren't they?
Well, I hope not, but
I shouldn't say that.
Yeah, but I mean, I musicians like that, but I also feel totally comfortable going to the Seattle Symphony. I mean, that just rocks my boat too. And so I always say I'm very eclectic. I love pretty much all music except maybe country.
Yeah.
You know, and because I always see the beauty somewhere and sometimes. And
I think if you heard the right country music, you'd like that too.
True. And I've been getting in touch with my hillbilliness too. Oh, yeah. I love bluegrass music.
There you go. Well, that's just country music.
Yeah. So
it's some Americana music.
Yeah, cool. Americana.
So we talked about the business earlier. Do you have a personal motto or mission statement?
I don't know. I'm thinking that the business and the personal are the same.
Good answer.
Because it's inseparable.
So what do you see as the main responsibility we have to ourselves during our lifetime?
Being happy.
Being happy.
Happiness. Because I have three goals that I set. And one is in the realm of happiness, one is in the realm of healthiness, and one is in the realm of wealthiness. And the way that I, and this is through some help with coaches, but the way that I work it is that every day I do one task in each of them. And the first thing that I do is in the realm of happiness. Because if I don't take care of my happiness, you know, who cares about health and wealth? So,
well, it's all interrelated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if you're not happy, you know, that's you do your best work when you can satisfy yourself.
So initially, when we started Greener Views, the show, it was more of an environmental.
Sorry about that.
There you go. It was more of an environmental program, but so this is something that we always like to ask up. And I know that this is all interrelated as well, but what do you see as our responsibility that we have to the planet?
I look at our planet as a living, breathing host. I mean, it's a being, just as we're a being. And again, we're talking about how we're all related, we're all connected. And so if I'm treating my host in a bad way, the host might reciprocate in a bad way. And so it's really my job to treat my mother, my Gaia, my host, with the utmost of reverence. You know, I'm here, I'm temporarily here upon this planet, and it's my job to treat her with respect.
I wholeheartedly agree. So in your opinion, what can one person do that could most likely have the most positive impact?
Learn self-compassion. So when you can be compassionate toward yourself, again, it's easier to be compassionate
towards others
around you. You know, it's almost impossible to be compassionate to those around you.
It's the golden rule, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, if you're treating yourself like crap, you know, chances are you're going to.
I totally agree. I love it. Before we wrap it up here, let's take care of a few of the logistics. What is the best way for others to check out what you do? Which contact phone numbers, email addresses, or web links would you like to share?
Okay. Well, again, the website is alkymoves.com. And my email is Eric, E-R-I-K, at alkymoves.com. And my number is area code 206-406-8154.
Great. Thinking at least a few weeks out, are there any upcoming events, special offers, or other information that you want to share with us?
Well, we have a national thing. It's called Moshe Feldenkrais Week, and it's it's about 10 days long, but I guess in Feldenkrais terms, a week is 10 days. But it goes from May 4th to the 13th. And it's not local. It's worldwide, really.
But we can all celebrate it individually in our own homes and with our own family and friends.
And so within that time, different Feldenkrais teachers, we usually give out free classes and stuff during that. So I'm looking forward to, again, putting on a few free classes during that time of the week of May 4th through the 13th, so anyone can come and try out this crazy stuff called Feldenkrais. And with regard to workshops, I'm starting my I call them the Happy Boomer running workshops. And starting in April, they're going to be just 2-day long workshops. Well, 2-day meaning 6 hours, 3 hours at a time. And we look at not just, again, the focus isn't on running. It's more on how to prepare yourself to run pain-free as opposed to going out and doing laps. It's kind of the opposite.
Yeah.
And yet the end result is you probably find yourself running faster than those who were out there running laps. And so I'll be doing a weekend workshop in April and then one in May, one in June, you know, just one a month because those are the prime running times.
Yeah. Great. And last and certainly not least, do you have any wise advice, helpful hints, or final words to leave us with?
Well, again, I just want to say that ultimately the power for change is within each one of us. It's in there, and it doesn't take much to find it. And if you have access to a baby, or you know, if you're babysitting, just observe the baby. Watch how it's playing.
Yeah.
And just you might start looking at the babies in a different way and just watch what they're doing and see that their play is really learning. And just a different way of looking at babies. I used to shy away from them. Now I'm like, oh, fascinating. Yeah. Oh, look at that baby. So just keep it simple.
Babies are generally smarter than adults.
That's very much. Yes, the highest learning creatures, yeah. I know.
We kind of work backwards in our life, don't we? We're going from being smart to, like, maybe a little less smart.
But, you know, it can change.
It can change.
It can change.
Thanks to Eric Lesueur and Alkai Moves and Feldenkrais and all the other great stuff you got going on. Well, super. You've been listening to episode 28 of Greener Views. We would like to thank this episode's guest, Eric Lesueur, for joining us. We love you, and we thank you for sharing a bit of your world through this podcast interview. We hope you enjoyed the time you spent with us today.
Oh, I did.
On our next show, episode 29, is Lesueur, is that French?
French-Canadian.
Okay, because we've got Gina Bordage, another French name, from talking about Discover Burien on our next episode, amongst other things, I'm sure. And on behalf of myself, Daryl Whalen, and our crew, Randy Parcell and Michael Schwartz, we'd like to say a heartfelt thank you to you and everybody out there. And I promise not to ask you guys if you have any 2 cents worth anymore, because I know that you don't. Special consideration goes to AmbrosiaDigitalMedia.com. Please check them out. Music for this and every episode is provided with permission by John Scully, John Henry Scully at SlapJazz.com. And we now have a new contact for Dan Fagens at danfagens.bandcamp.com. And J.D. Hobson at jdhobson.com. We'd love to hear your thoughts on ideal guests and topics for the show. You can email us at info@greenerviews.net or call 206-650-4587. Make your day extra special by checking out greenerviews.net and youtube.com/greenerviews for the video version of our episodes. Where you'll also find more information over the upcoming weeks. And lastly, Greener Views is part of the Healthy Homecast Network, so please go check out the other like-minded podcasts and businesses over at healthyhomecast.com. Thank you to everyone who has made this podcast possible. Here's to the health, happiness, and well-being of all. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening. Greener Views is part of the Healthy Homecast Network. Check out all their conscientious and sustainably focused podcast programs and businesses at healthyhomecast.com. Greener Views is created, developed, and produced by Daryl Whalen. Our audio engineer is Randy Parcell. Our video engineer is Michael Schwartz of AmbrosiaDigitalMedia.com. Music for this episode was provided by SlapJazz.com, DanFagens.com, and JDHobson.com. Your feedback is important. Please feel free to contact us with any comments or questions, including suggestions for guests and program topics. You can call us at 206-650-4587 or send a direct email to info at greenerviews.net. Be sure to check back often. New episodes coming soon.